won't you?
Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
One of the more frequent comments I get about the show is that they particularly like the show when my wife, Dr. Barbara Nimco, is on the show, and so ever eager to please, this is one of those Sundays, and she will be with us for the entire hour, and we're going to do something that we tried a couple of weeks ago that worked out very well, and we're going to do this, and what it is that I periodically get letters from listeners and also readers to my stuff, my Psychology Today and Time articles, asking me for advice. And so I created a series of composites of those that represent what are some of the more common kinds of letters I get. And what we're going to do is I'm going to have Barbara read those. I'll make whatever my hopefully best responses are to them, and then Barbara will disagree, amplify, agree, etc. And so without further ado, the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, my wife, now we've been together for 42 and a half years. We met at age 5. Barbara Nimco, welcome to the show.
I was only 3.
Right, exactly. All right, should we just get started?
Sure.
Well, I gave you a bunch of the letters. Why don't you pick one you want to start with that you think maybe one that you might best be able to amplify on yourself, and let's get
right,
it going.
Like, this one was sort of right up my alley.
Okay.
Letter from a burned-out teacher.
Okay.
Dear Marty, I've been a teacher in an inner-city second grade, and when I found that frustrating, despite having a good mentor teacher, they transferred me to a fifth-grade class in a suburban school in the district. I didn't like that either. It's just too hard teaching such a wide range of students in the same class. When I was a student, classes were grouped by ability, but no more. Now I have special education, gifted, new immigrants, and just plain wild kids all in the same class. And I get no support from the principal. For example, when a kid cursed me out and I wanted him suspended, the principal said no and told me to work with him and asked what I did to provoke him. On top of it all, I have to teach everyone, no matter their ability, the Common Core, which is very hard and abstract. I have no idea why anyone, let alone all fifth graders, need to know how to do, quote, generate 2 numerical patterns using 2 given rules, identify apparent relationships between corresponding terms, form ordered pairs consisting of corresponding terms from the 2 patterns, and graph the ordered pairs on a coordinate plane. I'm done. I come home lots of days and cry. I used to not believe the statistic that even though public school teachers usually get lifetime tenure after just 2 years, almost half of teachers quit public school teaching within the first 5 years. Now I know why. I'm eager to join them. Any advice on what I should do? A traumatized teacher.
Well, that teacher certainly makes a convincing case for needing to be one of those, I don't know, it's 30-40% of teachers who leave, even despite having tenure or the prospects of tenure. So I'm, you know, this person didn't leave any door open for me trying to get her to teach or him to teach, give teaching another shot. So I'll just share some careers that many former teachers have transitioned to. Certainly in the most obvious choices, they become educational administrators. Just because somebody's not successful as a teacher doesn't mean they might not succeed in education administration. The jobs are extremely different. Of course, it's crazy that they tend to promote teachers to be educational administrators when the skill set is completely different. You know, being an administrator is much more dealing with teachers and dealing with parents, dealing with bureaucracy, paperwork, the endless education code. And so there are plenty of jobs as deans, if you're good at discipline, maybe one-on-one. You may not be able to discipline a class, but there's a difference between that and, you know, somebody who's establishing disciplinary policy. Assistant principal, of course, and principal. Those are the obvious ones. But there are also positions in the school district. Remember, the one thing that is true is there is no bureaucracy as big as the government bureaucracy, and it's never bigger than in education. And Barbara, I'll be interested in your reaction to this later. You know, district. There's a whole district administration and its rules, government and policies. And there's the county, which is also somehow, you know, involved at a, quote, fairly local level. Then there is the state education bureaucracy, the federal education bureaucracy, from everything from curriculum to compliance. There's also, you know, all these foundations that give money in various forms of grants, whether they be corporate foundations or individual rich people who decide that education is the best thing, or these things called community foundations. Actually, Barbara, before I go, you know, on to some other career ideas, what are reactions to what I've just said about her potentially being an education administrator and the various options therein?
Well, I believe when you introduced me, you said that I might disagree with you.
Okay.
So why don't I start right now?
Oh, good.
Just for fun.
Oh, wonderful.
I think that the connection between being certainly a principal or an assistant principal to teaching is very strong. And today we are really asking our assistant principals and principals to be instructional leaders. We used to say that, and that was kind of lip service. But now that is what we're asking them to do. And so if you were really unhappy, traumatized, frustrated, and everything else in the classroom, I think it would be a very bad career move to become an educational administrator. I think it's important that those people have some resources to share. I wish that she had sent this letter before she'd closed the door to being in the classroom, because I think there are lots of things that could have happened that would have made her job doable. And she didn't try. It didn't sound like she tried any of them. So if you want to stay in the field of education, there are certainly other opportunities, like being part of a foundation or even the head of a foundation that helps to raise money for education. There are lots of nonprofits that are working with schools today, and that would be another avenue of a job that takes you outside of classrooms and kids, but is still working for the same cause, which is getting every kid an appropriate education so they can maximize whatever their individual potential is.
What about my point that there's a ton of jobs at the district administration level and the county administration level and the state administration level and the federal level, which have very little to do with the ability to manage a class, let alone a class with widely differing student needs? Are there jobs, would somebody like that be viable for a job at a district, state, or federal bureaucracy, education bureaucracy?
I would hope, actually, no. I would hope that people would look at her resume and say, I see you taught for a few years. Why did you leave? And not being able to manage classrooms or kids or different ability groups would not be why I would hire somebody to do a job.
But what if she's very organized? What if she really understands? You know, I have a client now who's got an EDD, a doctor of education, and she's very smart. She knows the literature. She could spout theory, etc. She's a good writer. She's a good thinker. But she just can't handle the class, and it was just too much for her to handle 30 kids in a class of very diverse needs. You know, does that mean she couldn't be a very good administrator? She's got what seem to be more relevant skill sets. Is that wrong?
Well, I think there are, again, different kinds of jobs. I wouldn't want to see her as a vice principal in the school.
Right.
That would not be good. There are certainly different grants that come from state and federal sources that do involve more management, hiring ability, organizational skills, lots of reporting, so writing skills. Those are related to education, but they are mostly outside of the school building. So yes, that would be a possibility, and because she knows a lot about education, grant writing would be another possibility. Mm-hmm. We love good grant writers.
Right.
Somebody with great writing skills who could help us to get some of these additional sources of funding to do some intervention programs after school, before school, those kinds of things. Yes, that would be a good fit.
Well, you know, I'm thinking also in terms of, instead of in theory, Barbara, you know, we talk about your work life. There, two of your most respected and trusted people who work for you are Josh Schultz and Tony Apolloni. And I don't think either of them, you know, have been master classroom teachers, or certainly what you've described as their job description. One is the assistant superintendent for business services. The other is the overall associate superintendent for whatever, I don't know. But the fact that they may or might not have have been a great classroom teacher, would that mitigate against them being so awesome for you?
Well, actually, Josh was a great classroom teacher. He taught in St. Helena. And so that's what makes him so good, because he really understands the connection between the business side and the education side. And people respect him because they know he's done both. It's hard to be, you know, a captain of the industry if you left the industry because you couldn't deal with it.
Okay.
And Tony has certainly taught at the college level, but he sort of, I met him through this whole getting grant avenue. That's how I met him in Sacramento when he was getting a grant from the state, and he used
Okay, you know what? We're getting a little into the weeds. So I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to suggest some more things for this traumatized teacher who has really given up on classroom teaching, and then I welcome your agreements, disagreements, amplifications. So one of the more obvious things that a traumatized teacher who can't deal with what was core to what she said is, I can't deal with the wide range of abilities in today's class. We no longer have ability group classes. So then the obvious thing is, if she happens to not need the benefits and the lifetime job security, being a tutor, it's a lot easier to teach one-on-one. You can individualize easily, and you're less likely to have behavior problems. Of course, unless you're quite entrepreneurial, the income isn't going to be as good, and you won't get the benefits. Would you agree that she might make a good tutor?
If she still likes kids and likes teaching, yes, but I don't think that she's going to make a real living wage doing that.
Well, like I said, you have to be pretty entrepreneurial. You have to be the kind of person who's going to go and write to all the department chairs. Let's say she's good at teaching math, or, you know, she knows math really well, writing to the department chairs of all the math departments and saying, I'm not great. You know, I've decided to leave classroom teaching, but I love working one-on-one with kids, and I can explain things clearly. Might you want to refer me? Do you think if she did that, you think she'd get a sufficient number of students to tutor?
I think she'd get a sufficient number of students, but I don't think it would all add up to a living wage salary for over a year.
You know, I've heard tutors get $100 an hour, some of them.
Really?
Yeah. Some of the good, you know, not.
Oh, don't say that too loud. A lot of teachers will be leaving and go do that.
Well, you know, and again, maybe that's more the special ed types, the ones who deal with autistic kids where the parents are absolutely desperate. But I heard some pretty high teaching salary for tutors. Anyway, next.
Could I suggest one?
Yeah, of course.
I think that part of this teacher's problem was trying to deal with all these various ability groups in a non-digital classroom. If you're going digital, then it doesn't matter that they're all on different levels, because they can be doing individualized, personalized work all at the same time, even on the same topic, if you're using the right materials.
No.
So if I were her, I would be researching the companies that provide that and
trying to get a job
doing. You have sales as one of the things that you're thinking that somebody could do. That would be, to be a rep for a publishing company that's digital, I think would be a very exciting thing, because she could really relate to the teacher who needs to have this varied levels in classroom lessons.
You know, one thing, as I'm listening, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the listeners. You know, we have been hearing about the promise of educational technology and computers to individualize instruction since 1970-something, and when they first stuck those groves of Apple IIes in classrooms and they were sitting gathering dust. Is, you know, honestly, you spend a lot of time in educational technology. No BS now, Barbara. Do we really have legitimate reason now to be more optimistic that today's crop of teachers, which as far as I understand are not that tech, you know, if you're really interested in technology, you don't necessarily become a teacher. Are you really any more optimistic that in the years 2016 to 2020, that the classes are going to be ever more tech-centric and using computers for individualization than they've been in decades past?
200%. I see it. I see it every day. There were a number of things that have happened. Number one, we now have, not every school, but a lot of schools are getting there very quickly. We now have the bandwidth capability. That was a huge barrier. When we tried to use the modern technology and you got the, what do they call it, the black circle of death that would spin around, that turned teachers off of technology. But today, with adequate bandwidth and infrastructure, it works. It works.
Okay.
And the materials are fabulous.
Right, great. Let's go off that.
Exciting.
Let's go off that. Because I remember the show's got to focus on career, so I'm taking these little sidetracks.
I know.
I'm just wanting to keep it brief. Okay. So you yourself mentioned sales, another possibility. There is a lot of software for schools, so that sounds good. coordinators. You know, people who are teachers tend to be very organized. That's one thing they do. And then again, she didn't say her problem was she was overwhelmed with the paperwork or whatever. Her problem was the curriculum, the Common Core, which she just felt was unrealistic for a large number of kids, and the fact that she's got a wide group of kids with different abilities in their class. Mm-hmm. But she could be very organized. And many workplaces, in and out of education, use project managers, project coordinators, event planners, event coordinators, even like, you know, professional associations, even education associations, they have conferences galore. You were always telling me you're always going to this conference, you're talking at this conference, this convention, this big meeting. So there are people who are involved in setting up the logistics. What's the hotel? Inviting people, getting the mailings out, getting the registrations done, getting the food, getting the this, getting the that. Given that she's been involved in education, maybe she could get a job as a coordinator for some one of those big organizations as conferences. What do you think about that?
I certainly think that's a possibility. Again, I don't know what kind of salary you make because it's not generally a 365-day-a-year job.
They're a member,
unless
you
pull together, you're working for a number of districts all at the same time.
No, you're working for one. You know, you're working for the American Secondary School Assistant Principals Association, and they've got the membership they're trying to do, and they've got local conferences, and they're trying to organize the website or get a new project done or hiring people, and then they've got the conference. There's endless need for coordination. Now, I agree. I just read a study that said that actually the number of coordinator and admin jobs are greatly declining as more and more of the people who are the managers or whatever have the software and the chops to do their own event planning or whatever. But there's still, I think, there's always going to be a need for some kind of coordinator, admin people, and maybe that's an option for her. Okay.
I agree, but you need to be very techie. If you're somebody who really is good at keeping up a database and reminding people and getting those messages out and not sending it to the people who are no longer there, the website, if you can do all of that, yes, I think that would be an interesting and fun job.
Okay, let's move away from that, for those who are just joining us, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. I've created a bunch of composite letters from readers and listeners to the show who enter my Psychology Today and Time articles that are hopefully relevant to you, my dear listeners. We started with a letter from on a burned out teacher. But we certainly don't want to go there. And where I really want to go first now is you. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, rather than my dealing with reading letters and us commenting and discussing about letters, we believe in Radio Veritas, real live radio. We don't even have a call screener. We take the calls in the order they come. So it's real, live, actual, not primped up radio. So if you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, I invite you to call before the lines get full and you have to sit on hold forever. So the phone number here for what I call a workover, and no pummeling involved, but maybe Barbara and I will pummel each other over trying to figure out the right solution to your problem. The phone number here at KALW and Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Okay, you got another letter that you'd like to read to me, and I'll try to give it my best shot?
Yes, I do. How about a letter from a burned-out physician?
Sounds great. That's one of my specialties. I have grown to have a very significant percentage of my clients are physicians, and I love working with them. Even though I know they're fallible, I certainly have a great deal of empathy. It's not as easy being a doctor as you might think. I teach, as you know, in the medical school at UCSF, and it is not easy to be a doctor today. It is not Marcus Welby days. Anyway, before we get to that, we've got calls in, so let's prioritize our dear listeners. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. It is your turn on the air. How can we help? Hi.
Is that me?
Yes.
Hi, Marty. I am a self-employed, underemployed, alternative, complementary health provider.
Okay.
Looking to attract more business, create more business.
What kind of alternative? There's a million things from Reiki to acupressure. What do you do?
I'm an acupuncturist. I've been
okay.
doing it for 28 years.
Okay.
I have a part-time private practice. I'm always supplemented with other revenue streams, but they've all dried up, and I'm thinking that what might be the most likely source is house calls, and trying to find what I need help is figuring out how to find people that can afford house calls, either have the income or great insurance, and either directly or through service providers, healthcare centers, nursing homes, that kind of thing.
Who are the kinds of patients with what kind of conditions are you most likely to be helpful and where they would welcome a house call?
I'm thinking like post-cancer treatment, post-stroke, early post-stroke. You know, the chronic conditions that are going to take some time to get better, but need, you know, where Western medicine is great at fighting the disease, but not as helpful at restoring the wellness.
Okay. And have you done any of the following? Have you spoken before patient groups, family member, you know, cancer patient groups, family members of cancer patient groups? Similarly, for stroke patients, have you? I know, for example, there is a cancer center. I believe, so you know, Sutter has one. I think that Kaiser has one. Have you spoken not only to those groups, but have you spoken to people who would be oncologists who'd be in a position to refer, or I don't know what the specialty of who stroke cardiovascular doctors? Have you talked at those conferences for doctors and for cardiovascular specialists and oncologists, saying, you know, call the five keys to restoring wellness in post-cancer and stroke patients? Have you done any of that, or any of that have any appeal for you?
I've done public speaking, not specifically to those targeted groups, but that's a great suggestion.
Are you a writer more or a talker more?
I do a little of both. I'm not an academic writer, but
no.
You know, just general information.
So what I would say is you need to start by writing an article, because that'll force you to concretize your thinking to its essential characteristics. The five keys to excellent, let's say, complementary alternative medicine for cancer patients, and another one for stroke patients, and try to get that published in publications read by either oncologists, cardiovascular docs, and patient groups, putting it on their websites. And then that article then serves as an excellent structure for you to then present a presentation that, you know, that you would do to those groups, ideally with case studies, because people remember case studies more than theory. How does that feel?
That sounds good. I was thinking of something maybe a little more direct in terms of senior centers that where there might be...
Too unfocused. I think that feels too. People who are active enough to go to a senior center are generally not suffering the severe impacts of cancer or a stroke and would welcome a home visit. Remember, you said home visit.
Right.
So
okay.
I'm focusing, I want you to focus away from that. The other thing that you would do is you must have had some home visits already with people. Is that correct?
Yes.
I would make, you know, the oldest rule in any business book is your best source of new customers is old customers. I would make a list of all the satisfied customers you've had who have reaped legitimate benefit from your work, and you would call them and not ask for referrals, because that's too high pressure. But you would say, you know, Mary, I was just, you know, you popped into my head. I was just thinking about you. I was just curious how you were doing. And then you hang up the phone. That makes you top of mind for them. It's completely ethical, because you are indeed showing interest. They're feeling great about it. You're not doing anything. You haven't even been this horrible, disgusting telesalesperson. And so that's another way, in a low-key, responsible way, to get new clients. Does that make sense?
That does.
Okay. I welcomed your call. Thanks for that. Barbara Nemko, do you have anything you want to add?
Well, I was thinking about the boutique doctors today, because they have clients who can afford, even if they don't have insurance, to get the services of someone who would provide home visits. And I would send them letters just telling them what you do with references and say, I'd welcome a follow-up call.
I think there's no downside in doing that. My intuition is that boutique medicine is normally done when people have very kind of minor conditions. They just want to get better access. If somebody has already had cancer and their post-cancer treatment and their post-stroke treatment, I'm not sure they're running to their boutique doctor so fast. But you have nothing to lose. You know, I'm a big believer in taking low-risk actions. You have nothing to lose by trying 10 such letters to boutique doctors. And then compare and see what yields more effort per hour of your time. Writing articles, doing workshops, doing it for patient groups, doing it for doctors, or this boutique doctor idea that Barbara has. Does that make sense?
That does. Thank
okay.
you.
Thanks very much for calling Work with Marty Nemko, Barbara Nemko. Let's go right back to the phones. I won't give out the phone number. We've got too many lines lighted up. So welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What is on your mind? How can we help?
Hi. I work for a startup, and when I initially was taking the job, there was a lot of negotiations between myself and the company, and what we settled on is, based on kind of their level of funding, we settled on a salary for a four-day work week.
Mm-hmm.
And verbally, the hiring manager and I discussed this, and she made a comment. She said, but, you know, on Fridays, which was the day off, you know, could you just check your email and just make sure there aren't any fire drills or anything that needs attention? And I agreed and said that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the offer letter came, the way that was the verbiage that was kind of translated to said that I would be working a half day from home on Fridays. And there had already been so much negotiation back and forth that I just signed it and figured this was her, you know, interpretation of it.
Whoa.
and that was fine. So since then, so I've been there for over a year, I've always done that. Like, I've always checked my emails on Fridays. If there was some sort of emergency, I've always responded. I'm always available on the phone. There's been times that I've worked, you know, some hours on Fridays. My husband and I went to Napa once, and I took my laptop and took care of things. And on top of that, I work almost every evening from probably about 8 till 11 o'clock to make sure that everything is done. So in my mind, I'm kind of going above and beyond the 32 hours that I'm being paid for. But I'm okay because I get to work 4 days a week. So recently, she kind of brought up, like, oh, by the way, you know, your offer letter actually says this, so you should be working, you know, a half day from home on Fridays. And I was kind of like, well, I kind of do, you know, what we discussed verbally was different, and I do exactly and then some what we discussed verbally. And she's like, well, you know, we're going to maybe need you to work more, but... you know, and you know, maybe we'll pay you for it, but there really wasn't anything concrete said. And she kind of brought up working 5 days a week, and I said, you know, I'm not interested. They also didn't really put, like, an offer out to me to say, hey, you know, here's what's going to change. This is what we want to give you if you're working, you know, 5 days a week. So since then, she just seems to be, like, really frustrated with me, and kind of there's just this sense of entitlement in the company that, like, somehow I'm not working enough, which isn't fully aligned with my idea about how much I'm working.
Well.
And more recently, like, I've been, like, yelled at several times at the top of, like, the CEO's lungs in front of other people for things that, like, I just happen to be in the room for that aren't even my fault. And just this past week, I had, like, an emotional breakdown at work because here I am working super hard, and then I have somebody yelling at me, telling me all these things that I'm not doing that I didn't even know that I needed to be doing because nobody, you know, told me that they were part of my job. So I'm kind of at this precipice right now where I'm not sure whether or not I just, like, should go look for another job that's going to pay me, you know, for 5 days a week so that I'm not getting yelled at, or, like, I just don't know if this is just how things are nowadays and people just don't respect each other's time and each other's, you know, personal space.
I've got to stop you here. Barbara, I have plenty to say, because I took the dominant role in the last call, would you like to take the lead on this or would you like me to?
Well, if it were me, I would absolutely set up a meeting and say, maybe these are the things that I've noticed have happened over the last couple of weeks. When I took this job, this was my understanding, and I assumed that when it was written that you might be working half day a week on Friday, that was just a way of saying, yes, I'll respond to my email. Now, maybe you want somebody full-time so badly that you're trying to push me out so that I'll look for another job. So let's make that clear, and then I know what we're doing here. But if you like the work that I have done in the year I've been here, then we need to come to some kind of an agreement because I can't work here under these conditions.
I have nothing to add. I thought that was a great answer. Caller, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely, we're in a place where it's time for me to basically say that. Yeah.
Right. Thank you very much for the call, Barbara.
Thank you. Good luck. And would you let us know what happened?
Good.
Sure.
Absolutely. Great.
Thanks.
Let's take one more call before we go back to the letters that we've gotten from readers and listeners. But let's let our listeners know you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We're devoting the entire hour to you, dividing it among two different things. One is responding to letters, as I said, from readers and listeners and kicking around that, and also taking your live calls. And so in the phone number, if you would like to, you'll have to wait on hold a bit, but if you would like to call and get this way, you get in the queue and you'll probably, you will get on the air. The phone number here for a workover by Marty and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can we help you? Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Am I on the air?
You are.
Hi. I wanted to just offer my experience about the burned out teacher.
Great.
I've taught for 43 years,
Wow.
And I went through much the same kind of experience.
Right.
I left teaching after 11 years. I taught in the middle school, and I did many, many different jobs during about a 10-year hiatus where I wasn't teaching. First, let me say that the greater public has no idea how difficult teaching in the public school can be. You begin to doubt your very essence as a human being. It is so difficult. My heart goes out to this person.
Mm-hmm. Tom, paint a picture. What is a vivid example that would help our listeners really feel the difficulty you're saying?
Well, I remember once in a middle school classroom, students throwing chairs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I couldn't handle that.
Yep. What's another example?
Could I interrupt for 1 second?
Absolutely.
Certainly.
Because very early in my career when I taught in the New York City public school system, I remember going to the principal and saying that a kid had just thrown a chair out the window, and the principal's response was, well, I'm glad you weren't on it. I swear to God, you can't make that stuff up.
Boy, that sounds familiar. And you're on your own, and nobody really appreciates what you have to put up with. And people, I remember when I got out of public school teaching, I had my colleagues calling me, how did you do it? How did you get out? I plotted my exit. You know, it was so difficult that you begin to doubt yourself as a human being. And the greater public does not understand, because we have students coming from fractured, dysfunctional homes, and you have to be a psychiatric social worker, practically.
Anyway,
it's
Anyway,
let me get back to my point. I tuned in just at the tail end. So she was a math teacher?
I don't recall. She said because she said it was a Common Core,
common
and she was talking about
she was an elementary teacher.
No,
all right.
Elementary math teacher, because she talked about the Common Core and the absurdity of some of these stuff that's required, right?
All right, so she's a math teacher. A teacher has incredible skills, all kinds of skills, management, people, all these skills, organization, real estate. I did real estate. A teacher has, if she's a math teacher, she has great skills for that. I sold wine. Wouldn't recommend that.
Why not? Wait, hold on. Why wouldn't you recommend selling wine? I'm always looking for nuggets to share with the listeners. What's bad about selling wine?
Because I thought about my role as a teacher helping people, and I didn't feel like I was helping people. Mm-hmm. I thought I was harming people.
Yeah. Okay, good. Fair enough. Go ahead.
So I went to law school, and I enjoyed that tremendously. I worked as a law clerk. I loved writing legal, doing legal research. Mm-hmm. But it's highly competitive, and I just felt that because of my age and my temperament, I would be better off teaching. And I actually found that I missed teaching. So I thought, okay, if I go back to teaching, I can't go back to the public school. I got a master's, and I got a job at a local community college. And when I started teaching adults, it was like I had died and gone to teacher heaven. And I would recommend to this woman that she sit down and she has a heart-to-heart with herself and said, what is your bliss? What do you love? You want to be an opera singer? Go do it. Don't do something that demeans you as a human being.
if she can afford it. Opera singers don't make money. But the community college teaching idea, I have heard that is very concordant with what I've experienced. I've had some teachers, now that I think about it, who work, public school teachers who went back to taught in a community college.
You have to get a master's.
Yeah, no question. Oh, at least that. Absolutely. Anyway.
But it changed my life. Changed my life.
Say just a little more about how it changed your life.
Because I feel successful. I feel like I'm doing what a teacher is supposed to do.
Very good. One more suggestion that my board operator, Joanne Marr, said, which is an excellent one. It's not really particularly remunerative, but adult school. I want to tell a brief story about that. Many communities in the public schools have an adult school. I was feeling a little depressed. I can be kind of sad. And I was looking for something new, and I said, what do I give a crap about? What that I haven't done, something fresh and new. And I said, you know, I just love classical music. And I thought back to when I was in ninth grade, and I took a music appreciation class, and I remember walking in the class every day, and there was this beautiful piece of classical music playing as we walked in. It was a bit of beauty amid the maelstrom of junior high school. And I still remember The Peter and the Wolf. I remember Afternoon of a Faun. I remember Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. And I said to myself, damn it, I want to teach at adult school an appreciation of classical music. And I immediately, in about 3 minutes, I dashed off a letter to the head of the adult education program, both at the Osher Center for Older People at UC Berkeley and the Piedmont Adult School, because that's the nearest one to my house. And I have not heard, I'm not going to tell you a fantasy story, but I love the adult school idea, and that, I think, is a great. It's not a way to make about $25 an hour, but it's irrelevant.
No, community college much more than that.
Yep, absolutely. I just am mentioning different options. I really appreciate your call. It was a great call. Thank you for your integrity and honesty about presenting upsides and downsides.
And one last thing. Sure. If that caller would like to talk to me personally, please give her... I'll give you my contact information off the air.
Yeah, stay on the line, and my board operator will take your phone number in case somebody calls, and then we can make that happen. Okay.
So
thank you very much for the call. Barbara Nemko, anything you want to add to that? Again, it was another education call.
Very heartening. Adult education is changing in the state because there's this great desire to get people to complete their high school diploma and go on to community college, and now it's kind of the high school adult ed programs and the community college programs working together. So there's less opportunity to teach things like classical music, which is a nice to know, but not a need to know on the road to getting a degree.
That's true, but, you know, nobody's more practical than me, but there is such an important place in life for beauty that amid the maelstrom, we do need to leave it. Look, you are in Guys and Dolls, which, by the way, opens a week from Friday at Napa. It's a fantastic
shameless plug in.
But may I have a heart attack and die if this is not true. You come home after almost every rehearsal and telling me what an amazing show it's going to be. And so if you'd like to see Barbara on stage, she's got a lot of little roles, including being the Jewish girl from New York playing the head of the Salvation Army, the general. We certainly encourage you to come. It's not expensive. It's at the beautiful Napa Valley Performing Arts Center. And
Napa
just Google
Valley College Performing Arts
College
Center.
Performance Center. All right.
But
I
totally agree with you, not about everybody should come see Guys and Dolls, although of course they should, about the importance of beauty in life. I'm merely saying on a practical level, options for teaching those things are less, although the adult school, you said Osher, that's associated with UC Berkeley, that's outside of that system, and that would be great.
Right. Okay. We do have calls in line, but as I promised, I do want to also keep our promise. You had said you were going to read me a letter that came to me from a burned-out physician. And those callers who are on the line, we will get to you, but you're going to have to be staying on hold for, I'm guessing, 10 minutes or something. So
I'll read fast.
No.
I shouldn't be complaining.
No
After
rush.
All, I'm an internal.
No, slow. Oh. Start again, please.
Dear Marty, I know I shouldn't be complaining.
I wasn't listening. Again.
After all, I'm an internal medicine physician, and I make $200,000 a year. But I'm unhappy. When this week I saw the Time article on depression in young doctors, I decided that perhaps it's okay to complain to you and ask for your advice. I went into medicine to treat patients, and I spend so much of my time doing everything else but dealing with paperwork, insurance companies, Medicare. And my patients are getting more challenging, from the non-compliant to those who come in waving an internet printout and thinking they know more than I do. And sometimes they do. No one can keep up with all the literature. No matter how efficient I try to be, I end up working 60-plus hours a week. And, of course, it wears you down seeing patients you can't help. And then there's the occasional mistake. Too often I feel insecure, remorse, and most of all, exhausted. I need to get out of patient care. What are some of the more rewarding things a doc can do?
Yeah, I have heard this again and again. Like I said, doctors have become an increasing part of my practice. And it's such a shame. You know, doctors who are some of our best and brightest people, they've spent so many years, so much money preparing to be doctors, and they're finding the practice of medicine is very different. It's not Marcus Welby time anymore. I do recall reading a survey that Deloitte did. They surveyed 20,000 U.S. physicians in 2014, and they said that many physicians are retiring earlier than planned in the next 1 to 3 years. This is just when Obamacare is going to be kicking in and more physicians are going to be needed. So, again, like with the teacher, I'm not going to, you know, the person didn't leave the door open for doing more patient care and rejuvenating himself or herself as a patient care doctor. But there are a lot of careers that many docs have found rewarding. The most obvious one, and I'm not crazy about this, to tell you the truth, is hospital administration. That tends to be a particular subject of chaos. There were 135 hospitals that closed last year because of poor reimbursements, and it's going to only get worse as there's going to ever more, you know, high-need, low-pay patients. But there are many leadership roles in hospitals that doctors could have if you like that somehow. Not just medical director. The medical director always were MDs, but now the hospitals and the healthcare systems are hiring physician advisors that consult with the hospital leadership on policy and program innovation, evaluation. A cushier job, if you're looking, if you're burned out, and maybe even at minimum at an intermediate step, is a writer. They use docs at like drug companies and medical marketing companies. Remember, we know somebody whose wife, remember, I'm not going to mention his name, but you know, we go to their house, and she's a marketer. She markets new drugs, mm-hmm. new practices, whatever. And they hire MDs to write product information, sales training materials, grant proposals, which you talked about earlier about education. And there's an endless amount of regulatory compliance. Every drug company, I'll never forget this. I had a client who worked for Genentech, and he said to me that you have to do 3 truckloads of paper for every new drug. So there's plenty of need for medical writers doing compliance stuff. Then there's the government. Government, we have seen that the government has grown in the last 20 years from 16% of GDP to 22% of the entire gross domestic product. The government, like the FDA, is hiring doctors all the time to develop policy, especially because we're going to be moving towards single payer. I have said it before, and I will bet anything that whether it be Trump is not getting elected, but if Hillary or Bernie Sanders gets elected, we are going to be moving towards single payer. And that's going to require a hell of a lot of docs and other people to develop policy review. And of course, already there is case complaints. You know, there's boards of complaints against doctors at the state level. The government has all kinds of websites and brochures for patients and for practitioners. So government work, I think, is going to grow like crazy. Of course, research and development, no question. Drug companies and others, medical device companies, they hire docs at all stages of the research and development process. Recruiting, there are, you know, some organizations are desperate to find doctors, especially in rural areas, or inner city areas where it's, you know, it's not so cushy to be a doctor. There are entities that, for example, Kaiser or Sutter or Blue Cross or Anthem or group practices. If you're a group practice, I happen to know a practice that specializes in high-risk pregnancies. They are recruiting, you know, because for a variety of reasons, there are ever more high-risk pregnancies, very obese patients, and they are looking for more doctors in that niche. And so, you know, being a recruiter, somebody who goes and screens potential applicants for those jobs, there's a market for that. And, frankly, somebody like me, you know, a career coach, people have no idea how many unhappy doctors, how much drug addiction there is among doctors. Alcoholism and, of course, anesthesiologists with their access to fentanyl and other kind of drugs. There are many unhappy, burned-out doctors. So if you are a counselor or a career coach who wants to specialize in doctors, you could do far, far worse. And it is a privilege. I love my doctor clients because they are so bright and capable, and yet they are exhausted, burned out, and troubled because it is such a hard job. So those are the things that I would suggest, Barbara, for this burned out doctor. Any comments, questions, reactions?
Those all sound really good. I have nothing I could possibly add.
Let's go to the phones, and I'm sure you'll have something to add to our next call. First, I'll give out the phone number, though. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, this is the last time I am giving out. Oh, I'm not going to give out the number. We've got too many lines lighted up. So let's just go to the phones. Let me take a moment. I'll give out the phone number. Should I? No.
Oh, okay. Give it out.
No.
Give it
got
out. You can't keep fiddling around about it. Give it out.
415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can Barbara and Marty Nemko help you? Hello. You're on the air.
Is it me?
It is.
Oh, hi, Barbara and Marty. This is Judy, and I've listened to you for years, and I love you, and thank you for the mental workout that you give me all the time.
Thank you.
It's so stimulating, and I just love you, and I can't thank you enough. And I just wanted to follow up. I don't know if the acupuncturist is still listening. I believe in acupuncture because it saved my life during chemotherapy.
Wow.
I've had, unfortunately, some of my cancer medicines put me in the red with my bones, and I got a pelvic fracture, and the pain from that is overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that the pain management nurses that are dealing with a pain doctor at UCSF, the nurses are wonderful, and I talk to them, and I tell them I have a wonderful acupuncturist, and they wish they knew of some.
Interesting.
And with the refracture, I couldn't get out to my acupuncturist.
Right.
So home visits would be fantastic.
So that's a great lead. We had talked about all kinds of sources, but nurses who work on oncology, in oncology or in pain management would be a great source. Great call. I appreciate it.
And I just have a couple other ideas.
Sure,
if I may.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure. The cancer support groups, sometimes the people's families will bring them to the group even if they're too sick,
we talked about that.
Oh, you did say, support groups. And then the, and I don't know where he is, but the Women's Cancer Resource Center in the East Bay is really excellent.
Great.
To let them know. And then there was one other thing, but if he contacted all the pain clinics and pain, all the cancer things have not, all the cancer treatments always have the, side effects that need acupuncture, and the acupuncture really, so there's a lot of good, he could really thrive, actually, with all this.
Makes great sense.
So
I appreciate
excellent ideas, and I'm sorry that you've had all that pain and all that experience with it, but these are really wonderful ideas for other people.
Yep. Thanks very much for the call.
And I wish everyone well, and acupuncture can really help you with this stuff. So and if your board operator wants to take my number, he could always call me, and I can give him some leads. So.
Okay.
Thank
very
you.
Good. Yes. Yeah, stay on hold, and she'll pick up when she gets a chance. She's right now on the phone with other.
I love you guys. Okay.
Thank you. I wish
thank you
health. Okay.
Oh, thank you, Marty.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, guys. Okay.
That is always so hard for me to hear. It is everyone's greatest fear, a painful disease.
But it's heartening to know that there are things out there that do work.
Yeah. And it also, though, my dear listeners, it's a reminder to all of us, it's cliche, but tomorrow is promised to nobody. And so in choosing your work, in making the most of your work, in the making the most of your relationships, and the making the most of your creative outlets, do it now. Do it now. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can we help?
Yes, hi. That's me. I take it.
Yes, it is.
Hi. I'm wondering if you can help me with a problem that my daughter is having.
Okay.
She's 24. She did what I think is everything right. She went to a great college. She worked really hard. She decided early on what she wanted to do, something that was practical and also could make a fairly decent amount of money in a profession. She did internships all through college towards her goal, which was to be in PR, either for advertising, fashion, or even tech, if that's the way, you know, the job offers.
I didn't hear the last word. You said advertising, fashion, and
advertising,
what?
Fashion, and she would even consider tech.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
You know, tech, which is where most of the jobs are, but she was, you know, saving that for if she didn't get any other offers that were decent. She got hired pretty much right away, right out of college, in what seemed like the dream job in the entertainment field, which I know that from listening to your shows, you have often said that's not always the best path these days.
It's just that it's tough because there's so many people who love fashion and entertainment that the competition is ruthless.
And the competition is ruthless, and she worked really hard, did all the right things in terms of, you know, marketing herself and how to get the job, the networking, and she did. She got a great job, loved the job as an assistant. And she's worked there for a year. She's worked over and above the number of hours a week that is required of her. Works pretty much all the time, and was, of course, being paid pretty much the lowest salary you could be paid right out of college, you know, pretty much just slightly above minimum wage. For her first year review, she went in for her review. Her immediate supervisor said, I can't lose you. You're the best I've ever had. You're fantastic. I will go to bat for you for a decent raise. And the bosses turned her down flat. They gave her a teeny tiny raise, which barely gets her above minimum wage, just by a dollar or two, and said, you know, it's an assistant position. Even though she's not doing assistant work now, she's doing step above. She's doing coordinator work. And so she's feeling very undervalued, but she loves her job. She loves her supervisor.
She needs to start looking. She needs to start. She has
there's
to.
No way she can.
No,
she's
already tried. Her boss went to bat. They didn't. Okay. You know, certain workplaces, she's killed herself. She's worked all these hours. She's worked above her job title. She's done everything. And they had the nerve, after even her boss, whom she likes, went to bat for her to give her some pittance raise. She's working for a little more than minimum wage when she has a degree from a great college. She did all the internships. She sounds like a perfect person. For somebody like that, for a star, she will find somebody who will, even in a competitive field. See, one size does not fit all. Just because in general I say don't pursue a crowded field. But you're describing an amazing woman in your daughter. And so she should not take that crap. There are going to be employers who will instead, and she should be applying for manager, for more entry level manager positions, so she's not seen as peripheral, rather staff. She needs to be a line person, not a staff person. She needs to redo her resume to emphasize those higher level things that she did. And she needs to use, if she's got a network, to try to network into a better position, or simply answer ads. She's also young, which, right or wrong, employers like people who are young. They feel they're more malleable, they're more technical, up to speed. And in the fashion industry, it is a young person's game. This, your daughter sounds like a winner, and I would encourage her to, I don't want to say necessarily quit her job yet, but really put out all the feelers. She deserves better than the crap she's been getting from that employer.
A lot of the people who have left the firm, there's been a lot of turnover, obviously, with that attitude.
Right.
A lot of them some of them have advised her, though, to renegotiate for a title, to go up a level in title and then do her resume. So that way she can not make a lateral move as another assistant.
Oh, absolutely.
But
like
she's
I said,
more likely to be hired.
I'm quite sure that with her being so unhappy and her boss loving her, they would have offered her, after a year of all that work, they would have offered her promotion. The fact that they didn't means there are no jobs. I mean, it can't hurt to ask. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But I would assess the probability is very low that they're going to suddenly, make her a manager of some sort. And I am not saying she should apply for a lateral position. I made really clear that she needs to work on her resume and cover letter to make clear that her goal is a launchpad entry-level manager position, no lateral. She's already 24, and that may sound young to you and me. But remember, she's now been out of college a couple of years. And for her to still be an admin, I don't want her kind of typecast forever as that. She needs, now is the time for her to make her move into an entry-level management position.
And it isn't falsifying her resume.
I don't want her to falsify a thing. I'm saying.
May I say something?
Of course.
Since she has a direct boss who loves her, I would have the boss to write the letter of recommendation specifically saying that she has been doing work above the level that she's paid at and should be at the next level.
Absolutely. And but remember, her boss can only speak to, you know, pretty much admin and coordinator work. To the extent to what I agree with Barbara in that writing the letter, but the letter should say something like, while she's done administrative and coordinator work, there is no question in my mind she has the potential to be an outstanding manager. Right. Get her while you can. She's young. This is the time to hire her. That's what her boss should write.
Yeah, that's what the letter should say.
Okay. Very good.
Her boss isn't going to want to write that because she doesn't want her to leave.
Well, a really good boss would want. I was just interviewed on Dice, and Dice asked me that question. And indeed, the really good bosses realize that the wisest, cosmically wisest thing to do is to let your birds fly.
Oh, right.
Right. And if she really is a good boss, she'll do it. And if not, certainly she should ask. Most ethical good bosses will say, I'm willing to do it, if not for those altruistic reasons. That boss wants a reputation as somebody who's not just going to keep people down to keep the employees there, but is willing to really act truly on the employees' behalf. Now, I'm being a little idealistic, but at least we should try to get that kind of letter first.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And you know what? If it were me, mm-hmm. and I was in that situation with an employee, I would, if I was going to write that letter, I'd go back to my boss and I'd say, you know, you're out of your mind because she's going to leave us and mm-hmm. she's fabulous. And the reason she's leaving is because you won't put her in this position and she needs to be there.
I agree with you 100%. And very often it is only the threat of a good employee leaving that motivates the employer to give her the promotion. Barbara, I agree with you 100%. We have almost no time, but just time for one more quick call. Always prioritizing listeners rather than do another letter from our readers. So welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. Make it quick. What's your question? Hi. Are you there? I guess she's not. All right. So then why don't we only do have a minute, and I'm always aware of disproportionate uses of, you know, my taking too much of the time. Let me ask
your show. It's okay.
But let me ask you a softball, open-ended question.
Okay.
If you were looking at people who were, let's say, older, we've talked about 24-year-old, we've talked about young teachers who are kind of burning out after a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
If you were, let's say, our listeners, and we do have a number of older listeners who are 50-plus, even 60-plus, maybe mm-hmm. even 70-plus, mm-hmm. who feel they still have something to contribute,
mm-hmm.
What's one not obvious thing you would say to them?
Keep doing it. People don't get fired because...
Let's say they're unemployed. Let's make it hard. Let's say they're unemployed and they're 70 years old and they feel they want to do something. What would you tell them?
It depends on their situation. If they can afford it, if they're getting Social Security and they're getting some kind of a retirement, I'd say there are incredible volunteer opportunities in whatever area that you're interested in.
And let's say they need some money.
Well, that's a little harder. And then I would say look for a job, but make sure that when you go for an interview that you are not looking old and worn and tired out. This is not the time to show up, if you're female, without all your makeup on, looking as chic as you can look, so that you're credible.
Even if you're not chic, what I would say is you must sell your age. If you're 70-plus, there is advantages that you bring to the table in terms of your experience, maybe even in terms of that you have more flexibility, you don't need to work 50 hours a week, you'll take a part-time job. I think you need to sell your experience that you've been around the block and that wisdom that comes sometimes with age will be a plus. And you'll do it with your friends and neighbors. And the fact that you're older, you've had more time to build a network and friends and relations and former coworkers. Don't be ashamed. Reach out to all of them. Ask for what you want. And that is Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do a full hour's worth of workovers on callers. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko for Barbara Nemko, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.